live from New York City in the PRN studios on the Upper West Side. My name is Mark Crowley. The show is Insight, and Ranger Mania is in the air. Well, they lost the first game last night. Not a big deal. Six more to go. Maybe not even. Reminds me of 1994. A couple years out of college, I was bartending on the Upper East Side, moonlighting. I was in radio back then, but moonlighting because I certainly didn't have enough money to survive in New York on the salary I was getting working in radio. So that night of the final game ended, I guess, my shift around 4 a.m. And I would say I was a wee bit inebriated walking down, I can't remember, 2nd or 1st Avenue. It was daylight at this time, certainly a weekday. And I remember hearing this cacophony of noise, and I was like, wow, where is this coming from? This is crazy. At this time of the day, all of a sudden, this bar door comes flying open, and all these people are spilling out into the street. And I'm like, what is this? Again, you know, I'm a little, I'd say three sheets to the wind is putting it mildly. And the light's out. So, you know, I'm squinting. And with my bad vision, wasn't a good combination. or trifecta, far from. So then I see it. It was the Stanley Cup. And a lot of the Ranger players with dozens and dozens and dozens of fans, completely inebriated as well as me. And it's a sight I will never, ever forget. 1994, 20 years ago. Can I repeat it? Yes, I think so. I'm not a hockey fan because being visually impaired, it's not one of the sports that I flock to arenas for, because following a puck, I remember my brother-in-law took me to see the Boston Bruins when I was probably about 12 years old. And all I did, I think, was eat pretzels, hot dogs, and drink a lot of Coke because I never saw the puck. But, hey, it was fun to experience once. And then some hot girl I went out with about 10 years ago also took me to a Ranger game and had a lot of concession stand experience that day, too. But anyway, it's a great sport. I really admire the players and the athleticism. And go Rangers! Let's go, New York City. Let's do it. Lots of time ahead. On the way into the station this morning, I saw a bunch of kids, maybe 30, 40 kids in a line. It's always kind of cool in New York City to see, especially in the summertime, looks like they're going on school trips, class trips, outings, which is always fun, very reminiscent of when you were young, when I was young, long time ago. But remind me of a new trend. It's called the walking school bus. Have you heard of this? It's kind of neat. Fewer kids, obviously, nowadays walk and or ride their bikes to school. And you know what the result is? The outcome is sedentary lifestyles, overweight, and obese. We see it everywhere, even in New York City. A big thing in the news nowadays is how overweight and how to shape and how unhealthy people, residents in the Bronx are, adults and children. So this trend, walking school buses, are pretty cool. So this is how it works. Pretty simple. In your area, wherever you live in the nation, it needs like one adult or two adults and a string of kids. And they walk to school, and you can do it with bicycles as well. I imagine, you know, it's just I can't see them doing walking and cycling, but it's got to be one or the other. But it's a great way, obviously, to have an open line of communication, make sure kids are safe, they're not getting tormented, bullied. So what a great way also to wake up these kids, get them kind of fresh and bright-eyed and bushy-tailed to get in their day, get their days off and starting, and pretty cool way to start it. So if you want to read more about this or start your own walking school bus, log on to walkingschoolbus.org, walkingschoolbus.org, and also send me an email if you do end up starting this, or if you have an existing program. Love to hear how it's going. Well, you know, blind people deserve a lot of things in life. Same rights as us, right? Well, do they? Well, in Iowa, you can pack heat. That's right. You know, I just read this the other day, and this actually has been taking place for about a year now. Does not allow, okay, people with bad vision or completely blind not the right to pack heat. So if you live in Iowa and you're completely blind, you can pack a gun. Advocates say that blocking blind people from the same gun laws that cover everyone else would violate the Americans with Disabilities Act. Wow, really? So now, there's a video online of this guy who's completely blind. He's going into a gun shop with his wife. who's completely sighted, and she's helping him pick out a gun. I kid you not, it's pretty funny. If you Google this, I'm sure you can find it. So he's in there for quite some time, and the nice thing about the gun he picks out, it has a flashlight attached to the bottom of the, I don't have any real gun vernacular, so I'll call it the barrel. But what good is that going to do him? Pointing on a subject that he can't see before he lodges a gun or a bullet into this person? And, you know, it's just kind of funny because it makes me think, like, all right, what's this guy going to do in the morning? Okay, guide dog, check. I got my cane, check. Revolver, check. I got everything I need for the day to get by. I mean, really? I mean, yes, it's your Second Amendment right, but do you want to shoot maybe a family member or a repairman or someone else inadvertently because it's your right to buy a gun and you're blind? A lot of people, even sheriffs, law enforcement, oppose gun use by blind people, understandably. They should just settle on buying one of those, cap guns, remember when you were a kid, and a holster. You know, this way, if you're self-inflicted, it won't hurt her. Maybe a taser gun. That's the answer. That is the answer. Blind people, persons with vision loss or complete blindness, should be allowed to use taser guns because I don't think, and you can call in and tell me if I'm wrong about this, at 888-874-4888. If you can kill somebody, I don't think the voltage is enough with a taser gun. So that made me start thinking, yeah, I know, hold on. what would I like to do, despite my bad vision that presently prevents me from doing so, that could possibly be illegal? So one of the first things I thought about is a pilot license. I dream of getting a pilot license. One day, when my vision gets corrected, knock on wood, fingers crossed, and keep writing my checks to the NIH, National Institutes for Health, because they're on the cutting edge. So, but until then, do I have the right to pack 100, 200, 300, 400, 500 people on a plane and fly them around? Because I think it's my constitutional right to fly people, even though my vision's less than acceptable. What about a surgeon? So how would you like to go to a surgeon that uses a magnifier to see paperwork? All surgeons wear a special glass, kind of like the one I drive with a telescope on the outside. But that's to see very, very small things like tissue and things are removing from the human body. So if you're visually impaired or blind, you shouldn't be a surgeon or a pilot, and you shouldn't be able to carry a gun. Right? I mean, this is just insane. Let me hear what your opinion is. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Now, I mean, I've done a few things, certainly, when I was younger, that I shouldn't have done in terms of having bad vision. I'm not blind. I remember working, and this is young, harmless stuff. I had a very, very popular Shore Bar in New Jersey, in Manasquan. And for a couple months, I stood outside. They call them doormen. You check IDs because a place, an institution, bar, restaurant, whatever, could lose their liquor license if people are underage drinking in their facility. So here's a guy, me, I can't even read my own. I didn't have a license back then because of my vision. So here I am outside this really, really popular seaside bar with people lined up around the block. And who am I? I am a guy at the front of the line, checking IDs, can't read their name. All I can see is their picture. And what I would do is go on, base it on looks. Like if they didn't look old enough, I'd say, okay, do you have a second form of ID? All right, I'll let you in. And then someone else would come by if they look really questionable or were a complete jerk. You know what? I'm sorry. I can't let you in. And this certainly could have been legitimate. They could have been 25 years old, of age. But, you know, that's what I did back then. And that was kind of funny. It was harmless, right? And I drove without a license a lot. I got my driver's license when I was 25, when I received a pair of telescopic devices. But before then, I quite often would take out my sister's Datsun 280Z. And a matter of fact, once I was actually driving down the road, I remember I was in fifth gear, and a car is coming towards me on the highway, waving like crazy. It was my mother. I didn't know it. I couldn't see her. And I stick my arm out, and I wave right back to her. I thought my goose was cooked for sure, man. So I got home. I'm freaking out. I'm sweating. I had a pizza in the car, actually. I was with my friend. So my mother comes home like an hour later, and she's like, hey, guys, I saw you on the road. And I'm thinking like, okay, here it is, waiting for the other shoe to drop. She thought it was my friend driving. So I'm thinking, oh, my God, who's got worse eyes, me or my mother? Oh, man. So, yeah, I did a lot of crazy stuff. But, again, I wasn't packing heat. I don't plan to buy a gun. I don't want to buy a gun. Forget aside from the political reasons, because I just can't see enough. Would I ever want to be a police officer because I can't see? Or because it's my right, you know, as an American, that, you know, or I should sue the police association, the city of New York, because I have bad vision, but that shouldn't prevent me from passing a test. Oh, man. And also I race bikes. But, you know, these are harmless things I used to do. But going back to the point issue here, blind people buying guns in Iowa, I just think it's a little bit absurd. You know, enough is enough here, guys. Let's face reality. So, you know, life comes with a lot of labels. We certainly know on all different levels, whether it's race, sexuality, jobs, nationalism, countries, societies, you name it. And of course, with disabilities, it's no different. There's an organization called Think Beyond a Label. And AVER started not too long ago. It's a public-private partnership that delivers information, outreach, and resources to businesses and job seekers to ensure recruiting and hiring opportunities for the job candidates with disabilities. Now, there are 54 million people with disabilities in America. 54 million. That's a lot, right? I can't even, you know, imagine, put your mind around that figure. So being disabled is tough enough. Trying to get a job, well, let's find out how tough it is. Welcome to the show, Barbara Otto from Think Beyond a Label.
Hi, Mark. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
How's the weather in Chicago?
You know, it's a lot better today, although I'm a little sad that the Kings are up one. Go Rangers.
Oh, within the first 10 seconds. Oh, whoa, I'm sorry. You said go Rangers. Is this a facetious statement?
No.
Really?
Absolutely not. Look, I am all about seeing the Kings go down.
Really? Are you in a soundproof room right now?
Pardon me?
Are you in a soundproof, safe environment right now?
Oh, I am. I'm just saying. They beat my Hawks, and so I really want to see them go down.
Well, Barbara, we've never spoken, but I really adore you and love you at this point. Go ahead, Barbara.
Go ahead.
As I was saying, Barbara, you know, it's a challenge enough and sort of a disadvantage, and this is a general statement I'm saying, when you're born and or receive a disability in life, and then to top it off, trying to get a job and feeling like a productive and inclusive member of society makes it even more difficult. And obviously, you're trying to cure that with Think Beyond the Label.
Absolutely. You know, and one of the things we really realized, Mark, when we launched Think Beyond the Label in 2010, is that there hadn't been this national approach. We got all 50 states to work with us in launching Think Beyond the Label.
Fantastic.
But there had not been a national approach to targeting businesses about getting beyond the labels that they were giving people with disabilities since the 1970s with the last Hire the Handicap campaign. So imagine, we've had the ADA,
yes.
We've had medical advances, we have almost, we're getting almost beyond one in five, right, of Americans
yes,
having
absolutely.
A disability.
Especially with the boomers, you know, where they are now.
Exactly. And we hadn't updated our approach to working with businesses. And the response from people with disabilities has been absolutely overwhelming. Because for the first time, this isn't about selling what I call the whole day-old bread theory. I think people with disabilities, I think even the providers that serve them in employment and training have always approached employment from, here, take my day-old bread. We're not day-old bread. We are highly skilled, highly qualified.
Fresh out of the oven and hot.
For these positions, and it is blowing my mind. the response we're getting from people. It's very, very exciting. We ended up launching a series of national online career fairs where we're finding 60% of people with disabilities, and they're participating all over the country. And we've got big businesses like Boeing, even the IRS. We've got incredible businesses like TRW, Aetna, Pearson, AT&T.
Fantastic.
All these businesses coming together, and 60% of the job seekers participating in these career fairs are people who are, for the first time, maybe self-disclosing that they have a disability.
That's a big feat.
Huge. 60% of them have an advanced degree of some kind and have been on the job for at least 5 years. So it's really, Think Beyond the Labels really broken down a lot of the myths that not only businesses have, but sadly to say, I think a lot of the providers who do job training targeting people with disabilities, including some of our public sector friends and social sector friends, it's really doing myth busting for them and moving people out of this old day-old bread mentality.
And I also love the fact that you have a dual mission. Not only are you helping job seekers, but you're opening the eyes, more importantly, to the employers, potential employers, because obviously when you started this organization, Think Beyond the Label, which I love the name, by the way, it's phenomenal. But what were one of the top three reasons when you started maybe speaking with major corporations, people in the head R divisions, department heads, et cetera, of why they are not hiring people with disabilities?
Well, you know, there are three big fears that big businesses have. Number one is because for so long we've had this day-old bread strategy, they were concerned they weren't going to be able to find qualified candidates. And you and I both know that's not true.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Number one. Number two, there was this fear of I'm going to get an unqualified candidate and then I'm not going to be able to let them go.
They'll be stuck with them forever. Yes.
Right? I'm going to be stuck with them.
Wrong.
We have spent a lot of time educating businesses on the fact that there's a highly skilled population, a matter of fact, a very untapped workforce. Also educating them and employees on the benefit of self-disclosure, educating them on the fact that they probably have a lot of employees with disabilities that just haven't disclosed, number two. Number three, educating them on the facts behind the ADA. And I think their third big thing, Mark, that they worried about was access to health care. And this is where the Affordable Care Act really gave us a great boost, because no longer can private health insurance companies discriminate against pre-existing conditions, and they can't charge more
Fantastic.
For pre-existing conditions. So businesses don't need to worry about their health care costs going up.
So, Barbara, do you think the EEO law doesn't do enough at this point?
Well, you know, back in September of 2013, the Obama administration launched a new section of the Rehab Act, which requires every federal contractor to have at least 7% of their workforce comprised of people with disabilities. And this is huge, Mark, because first of all, federal contractors comprise more than 22%, almost 23% of the entire workforce in
this
country.
Wow, it's a big number.
It's huge. And so requiring that they diversify their recruiting strategies, that they start demonstrating in their affirmative action plans that not only are they working to get a qualified pool of candidates with disabilities, but that they're hiring them throughout the company. So not just in mailroom jobs, not just in distribution centers.
Where they're out of sight.
But they're hiring them at all levels
Good.
Throughout the country. That's been huge.
So what is the biggest stumbling block, hurdle with speaking with companies to educate them about the potential, the untapped pool of 54 million Americans with disabilities, to let them know, listen, there are vital and viable people out there, potential employees that can do quite very well and exceed it and take your company to another level. What's the biggest stumbling block besides the ones you just mentioned? Is it just perception?
The number one stumbling block is getting beyond this notion that people with disabilities are not job ready. And I think a lot of that has to do with just the real lack of understanding and experience of who we're talking about. People with disabilities are an extremely heterogeneous population. You can't tell by looking at someone whether they have a disability.
Well,
right?
My thing is that we all have a disability, obvious or not.
Right, exactly.
We all have limitations, yes.
Yeah, we're all temporarily able-bodied.
So, very well put.
Yeah, so I believe that many of the businesses want to be hiring mm-hmm. people with disabilities. It's just that they're stuck in a framework that they believe that people with disabilities either have physical disabilities or cognitive disabilities. And that's if someone's just being really honest with me. And so what we tend to do is show them the statistics. We have more than 7,000 registered active job seekers that participate in our online career fairs. And just for all your listeners, these are free career fairs. There are businesses that are looking to hire all over the country, so it doesn't matter if they're all national businesses. So if you're in New York, Chicago, you know, Alabama, you can still participate.
And that's on thinkbeyondthelabel.com.
Yep, Think Beyond the Label. Click on Job Seekers and look there. So getting this notion beyond this, getting them to think beyond this label of what they think about with disability and getting them to look at disability in the same kind of way as they label the bald guy or the loud talker or the close talker, you know, after somebody went,
the guy with halitosis.
Right. Yeah. So getting them to think beyond labels and getting them to really look at our registered users. And when they participate on these career fairs, I hear from recruiters all the time how excited they are about the candidates. Because the number one thing they see on an online career fair is how technology savvy people with disabilities are.
It levels the playing field.
Exactly. It levels the playing field for the business who may have been a little nervous about interviewing a person with a disability, and it levels the playing field for that person with a disability who might be a little nervous about talking about, you know, the job and having to talk about the fact that they have a disability. Just by the mere fact of participating in our online career fair, you're stating I have a disability, and it's completely off the table.
So, Barbara, how long of a process is this? I want to move on to the actual job seekers, but just finally in the employment aspect in terms of employers, you go in there, you show them the numbers, the stats, et cetera. You get them involved possibly in a online seminar, maybe a recruiting seminar, et cetera. How long of a process are we talking about? You know, this is, you know, we're talking about changing people's mindsets, and that can take a hell of a long time.
It takes a long time. You know, I actually am the CEO of Health and Disability Advocates, which is a national policy group, and we created and spearheaded and continue to power Think Beyond the Label. I've been doing this for more than, 20 years. This is my 20th year of focusing on that intersection of economic and healthcare security. And 20 years ago, employers were worried about one thing or this thing or that thing, and today they still worry about this thing or that thing. Hmm. What has really changed, Mark, is the 503, Section 503 of the Rehab Act that tells these federal contractors, again, 22% of our workforce will be impacted. Those businesses must now demonstrate that they are recruiting, hiring, and retaining workers with disabilities. That is what has really changed.
I imagine in these 20 years, I'm sorry to cut you off, Barbara, that it must be frustrating. You must want to shake some of these people and say, listen, yeah, a mandated policy is great, but don't you understand that not
absolutely.
Only are you doing good by these people, but you're doing good by your bottom line.
Exactly. If you go on our thinkbeyondthelabel.com business section, myths and facts, we talk about the reality mm-hmm. of this untapped workforce, not only being highly skilled, but the fact that they are your customers. that you are missing out on revenue by not visibly supporting the hiring and retention of workers with disabilities, because we have a lot of consumer power.
Huge consumer power. It's a very tight community.
That has made a big difference.
Especially with the technology aspect you alluded to before. You know, once a company is known for doing the right thing, whether it's hiring people or providing a service for the disability community, I mean, the floodgates open.
Absolutely. Not only do the floodgates open, but family members, friends, people
exactly.
who are inclined just to support businesses that are doing what makes sense. Everybody's in the game then. So I'm really seeing businesses starting to turn around, and I do have to say that the Affordable Care Act has also made a difference.
Good.
Because it's opened up a lot of doors for job seekers with disabilities who maybe had to work for other companies before to get access to health care. Now they can purchase a plan in the marketplace, and they can be self-employed.
Fantastic.
And they don't have to artificially keep their income low just so they can get access to publicly funded health care. So I think that is what's also really changed the minds of businesses. They're seeing more freelancers with disabilities, and that's really exciting to them.
And probably more of a less of a risk in their eyes. Let's hire a freelancer. We're not really connected to them. We're not married with them. We can cut them loose at any moment.
Yes, but they're also getting a lot of experience with them. Just recently started working with a company who was working with a freelancer who is actually someone who's a full quadriplegic who's been doing web design.
Great.
Work for them, and blew their minds when they actually met the guy.
Excellent. Excellent.
You know, and now they're going to hire him.
Good deal. Good deal. Now, in your 20 years, obviously the lexicon in this area has changed a lot. You know, you mentioned the H word, handicapped. And I think the buzzword certainly nowadays, certainly the last 5 or 8 years, is inclusion. Obviously, this is part of the evolution of acceptance, understanding, education process. And this is a good thing.
Yeah. And, you know, the workforce is always the final frontier. You know, it has been for every other minority group. And inclusion in workforce, but has sort of taken a little bit longer for people with disabilities. But we're changing the norm. I think we're also starting to see it in some of these businesses who have made real meaningful commitments to employing people with disabilities, like Walgreens, Kmart. And you're seeing it show up in their retail ads. They're starting to show people that have visible disabilities shopping or working in their workplace. So it's making it the norm, and that's why we really want to get these businesses to think beyond labels, because it's making disability a part of the norm and a part of the natural progression of a lifetime.
Barbara Otto from thinkbeyondalabel.com. Address the job seeker right now. Someone's listening. They have a disability, whatever on the spectrum it is, what level. What advice can you give them quickly to motivate them, either for education, for inspiration, and or just to get them going so they can actually start the application process, either the education process, in the right direction for them?
You know, the opportunity is now. Now more than ever, we have more opportunity to go to work and to work, ramp up into work, or go to work full-time like we've never had before. Take advantage of this new 503 regulation. And you know what? You don't have to go through a publicly funded program and get rehabbed to death before you go to work. You can go on to this online career fair. You can get connected through others, but go to work now. You've got all the pieces in place. You've got access to health care in place. Your state in New York has a fabulous program that wraps around private coverage if people need help with activities of daily living. Go online, go to thinkbeyondthelabel.com. You can click on your state page. You can learn about the resources available to you. But let's seize the day, guys. Like no other time in history have we had this opportunity. And so it's up to us to really move ourselves forward and take advantage of this.
And Barbara, you mentioned a few minutes ago a few companies that are leading this initiative. Are there any states that are really pioneering ground in this area?
You know what? You live in a great state. Right. New York has really been looking at how do we create inclusive workplaces? How do we begin looking at making sure that programs and services line up so people get meaningful, competitive, integrated employment? Your Office of Mental Health has been extremely engaged in working with youth on a path of a successful transition into economic security as adults.
How does Chicago compare?
Pardon me?
How does Chicago compare?
Chicago compares well. You know, I'll be really honest with you. I got to say that New York is extremely progressive in a lot of areas, especially at the state level. Illinois is getting there. Our Illinois Department of Employment Security has really embraced the 503 Section 503 of the Rehab Act and is asking everybody who applies for unemployment insurance to indicate whether they have a disability and be willing to disclose, and is connecting them with services and supports. They're connecting businesses with Think Beyond the Label and trying to get businesses to talk to other businesses. So all of the states are at a different place with it. I will say that the two states we're sitting in, Illinois and New York, tend to be some of the better states. I got to tell you, one state that's really doing a great job is also California. Very exciting stuff in California.
Good to hear. Barbara Otto, thank you so much for your time and the stellar work that you're doing. I mean, for opening the eyes of corporations, you know, all across the country, and more importantly for job seekers. I mean, there's so much room to gain here, a lot of ground to make up for, but, you know, slow and steady. I guess you've been at it for 20 years. You've seen a vast difference. So I hope it, you know, doubles and triples very quickly.
Well, thank you, Mark, and thanks for all you do to share information like this and to share information about my new best team, the Rangers.
And I also believe on thinkbeyondthelabel.com. Thinkbeyondthelabel.com. You have a newsletter people can sign up for, and also a portal to search for jobs.
Yep.
And for anyone who owns a company or works for a corporation, you can also go on thinkbeyondthelabel.com to sign up to find out how you can open your eyes in the HR world to hire more persons with disabilities.
Absolutely. We've got lots of free training for both job seekers and businesses, so check it out.
Okay, Barbara, we take the cup. You come here, I'll buy you lunch or dinner, whatever you like.
Excellent.
You just got to get yourself here.
All right.
Thanks, Barbara.
Take care.
When Insight continues on PRN.FM, you're going to meet Suzanne Colasanti, top-selling author on teen books, and you're going to hear about her, how her life impacted her writing. Next on PRN.FM. Welcome back to Insight on PRN.FM. My name is Mark Farrell. Thank you so much for joining me, wherever you are. East Coast, West Coast, Europe, Asia. Where else could people be, Suzanne? They could be anywhere. And we'll get your mic on in a second. Well, it's a great day in New York City. Well, yeah, well, it's kind of weather-wise, kind of gloomy, wet, and nasty. But the Rangers, you know, it's Ranger Mania. And are you feeling it out there, Suzanne?
The Ranger Mania?
Yeah.
I would say not so much.
Not so much.
A sports person.
Just go with it. But our last guest on Beyond the Label, from Beyond the Label, who lives in Chicago, is totally pulling for the Rangers. How cool is that?
Pretty cool.
Barbara Otto rocks, that's for sure. So Suzanne Colasanti is a former teacher, and I welcome her to the show. This is her eighth book, and congratulations on that. It's titled Now and Forever, published by
Penguin.
I was right, Penguin. And it's kind of an interesting story because it targets teenagers, number one, but it kind of asks the question, is forever forever?
That is true. I think especially in the teen years, it's hard to imagine a relationship ending. I know when I was a teenager, I thought I would be with my boyfriend forever. And that's the feeling I think a lot of teens do have.
And that actually fell through? Unbelievable. This
Can
must
you
be the
believe
first
it?
One in history.
You know, and it's crazy because I was even engaged senior year.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah. And so, and
senior
I was like.
Senior year of what? High school?
Yeah. And I
engaged
just,
to be married?
Yeah. And I just couldn't imagine it ever ending.
Wait. I can't believe you can gloss over that statement.
Well, you know
Looking
what?
Looking at you, I can't imagine you were living in, you know, some two-bit, you know, countryside in a trailer somewhere. No disrespecting to trailers at all. But you grew up in New Jersey and after
affluent
town.
Middle
of nowhere, New Jersey. I was like the one poor kid in the rich town, right?
True, true.
So it was middle of nowhere, New Jersey, very small town. But like, I had serious self-esteem issues. My self-esteem tank was stuck on empty all throughout junior high and high school.
Which is pretty common at that age.
I think so. And my feeling, and I've heard this from other girls before, my feeling at the time was that no one else will ever love me. I will never find anyone else in my whole life. I remember feeling that with 100% certainty.
And so what is this gentleman's first name?
We have to talk about, if we're going to mention boys by their first names, real life boys, we have to focus on the fact that now I have found my soulmate / love of my life / man of my dreams. And the reason that I did not go through with getting married when I was a teenager.
Thank God.
Or in my 20s.
Thank
or
God.
In my 30s.
Thank God. Yay,
was because
you
I
are
felt
smart.
Like,
the glasses aren't a facade.
I felt like I didn't want to settle. I felt like
you shouldn't.
There was something else missing in every relationship I've had. And I've been with good people. People I was happy with and people who were good to me, but there was always something missing.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I felt like a missing piece, and I knew that the person I was meant to be with was out there somewhere. I could just feel his energy out there somewhere. And so I didn't want to settle for less than what my heart desired. And that's one of the messages that I try to put into every one of my books, because I do write about soulmates. I write love stories for teens. And one of my main messages is, do not settle for less than what your heart desires, because you deserve to find the kind of love you want.
And this is all coming together right now. It crystallizes, obviously, the premise of your book, Now and Forever, which came out less than a month ago, available everywhere, that your protagonist, Sterling, is dating this gentleman, a boy, I can't call him a gentleman, maybe it's a gentleman, Ethan, and falls head over heels, both of them. But then he takes off, gets catapulted basically overnight into stardom.
Ethan Cross blows up. He becomes the world's biggest rock star. So when Now and Forever begins, Ethan and Sterling are in love. They have a wonderful relationship. They have so much fun together. They have so much in common. His musical career starts taking off. He starts getting more views on YouTube, although I don't mention YouTube directly. I try not to mention things like YouTube and Facebook directly because
it's
I don't
understood.
Want the book to be dated that
sure.
way.
Yeah. Yeah,
back
you're
in the
right.
days of MySpace, I read books from 2004 and they
right.
mention MySpace.
Yeah. 6 months
it's
from
so
now,
funny
it be
now.
Archaic.
Because at the time, I mean, who could imagine there'd be
right.
something after MySpace?
Mm-hmm.
Now I wonder what's after Twitter, what's after Facebook? I think that's an interesting question. But so he blows up, and so she has to really ask herself, how much of Ethan's dream am I following instead of my own? Like, it was their big dream together that he would blow up and become the world's biggest rock star. And when he does, Sterling has to ask herself, who am I? What's my identity in this? And what about my dreams?
Which is totally pulled from the tabloids, read in books, understood in Entertainment Tonight programs, that so many people are stuck in this conundrum. So it's very real life, reflective of real life issues.
Well,
especially for teenagers.
It's so funny because when I was a teen, one of my biggest fantasies was being the girlfriend of the world's biggest rock star. So
oh,
I wish that was real
here,
life
Suzanne.
For me then.
All coming into play here.
Yes.
So you're living vicariously through this character.
Oh,
which
yeah.
Is great.
I mean, writing Now and Forever was my way of bringing one of my biggest fantasies to life. Because when I was a teenager, I thought, okay, if I ever write a teen novel, I want to write the kind of book that I would have wanted to read as a teen.
Understood.
So that's what I try to do.
Obviously, if you didn't, it would be so much harder to write and it wouldn't be as successful.
Well, my internal age is 16, so it's easy to write for
teens. So you're still getting married as a teenager.
Right?
I like it. Nice connection there. So now, growing up, you mentioned, obviously, you grew up in an affluent town. You were less than affluent. You didn't have a lot of money. You felt very unpopular because you were a nerd. Self-proclaimed
yes,
nerd.
And specifically a science nerd.
That's
thank
a
you.
Very cool mm-hmm. nerd to be, though, because it's very useful later on in life.
I know.
I don't know how, but somehow.
Well, I mean, I was a science teacher
you
for 10 years.
You could work for Monsanto.
So I worked for NASA briefly, actually.
Did you really?
In grad school, just a couple summers. Yeah.
Do you have an ID badge still?
I still have it, even though it's not valid anymore, of course.
It doesn't matter.
But of course, I saved it.
It's always valid in your heart.
Actually, I saved both of them. I had two different ones.
Because, very cool. Very impressive. So interestingly enough, at a very young age, I think age 12, you knew you wanted to become a school teacher.
Yeah. When I was 12, I knew I wanted to be a science teacher. I wasn't sure which science yet, but I had an amazing science teacher, seventh grade, who I'm still friends with. And her name is Nancy Bennett, but when I had her, she was Mrs. Cadwallader, and it's so weird now.
Good thing she got married.
Yeah, well, it's
changed that last name.
It's weird now not to call her that. Like now, I call her Nancy, like a grown up.
And hey, teach.
It's so funny. She taught just general science in seventh grade. I taught physics and earth science, which is astronomy, meteorology, and geology.
In the South Bronx. Wow, heavy. Was that by choice?
It was. I felt like and I still feel to this day, my purpose is to reach out to teens in any way I can and help them feel less alone, do everything I can to make their lives better. So when I was a teacher, of course, I had more one-on-one interactions on a daily basis.
Now,
as an author, I can reach way more teens through my books, which is fabulous, too. But at the time, I just felt like, where am I most needed? In New York City.
And how long did you teach in the South Bronx?
I was there 7 years, altogether 10 years. I started at a school, at a top 10 school in Midtown Manhattan.
So you fit right in there. 5'10".
Oh, I'm 5'8".
5'8".
Do I seem, you have heels
it's on.
It's my core. Well, now because I'm talking to the microphone, so I'm not engaging my core right now. But
and very Caucasian, very all-American looking. So you didn't stand out at all.
Well, it's funny because that school in the South Bronx had several white teachers. You know, but I think in the time I was there, I had a total of 3 white students.
And when we were talking the other day, you said you actually would go there on lab days even earlier because you would actually do diligence and actually make calls to the students to remind them to get to school on time.
We had lab at 7:20 for a few years, which is crazy.
Insane.
Early. I can't imagine how anybody can focus at 7:20. I'm not a morning person, but I play one on TV. So, you know, kids would always ask me, like, how do you have so much energy? Do you drink coffee? I don't drink any caffeine.
Thank God.
At all. But I just felt like I needed to bring it and give the kids a good experience.
Well, they need that role model.
Dude, so absolutely. I would wake up at 4:45.
Oh, we're at the dude level now?
Oh, Mark, you and I have
15 minutes into this conversation, I got the D word.
Are we going to say how we met? This
we
is a
will.
Really good story.
This is a build
we're
up here.
Say
this is
it.
A slow
it's very
build
cool.
Up.
So
okay.
You've been
the
dude
climax
for a while.
In a few minutes, okay?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
So I would wake up at 4:45 to get myself ready, and then I would call students who had lab that morning to get them to lab, or else there are some students who didn't have alarm clocks, they just wouldn't wake up. And in New York, you have to take Regents exams at the end of the year. And if you don't have enough labs, you can't take Regents. So I was like, I am going to be calling everybody who wants a call to get you awake to make sure you are in lab.
Great to see the passion there.
So passionate. I just think you have to love what you do.
You have to.
I loved teaching. Now being a full-time author, it's my dream job.
So talk about the switch, Suzanne Colasanti. I mean, obviously you love doing that. You had the idea and the drive to write a book that would impact tens and thousands and possibly millions and across the borders and maybe other languages. I'm sure that's possibly a goal of yours. Maybe some of the other books have been translated into different languages. But was that a hard, very arduous decision to say, you know what, I'm jumping ship. I worked really hard for this. I even worked for NASA. I'm going to give it all up. Actually, your first two books you wrote while you were teaching.
Yeah.
But then you decided to pull the plug and go from a very regimented, by-the-minute scheduled day to sitting in a room where you could look at a keyboard and type a page.
It was a really tough decision because, like we said, I'd wanted to be a teacher for so long, and that was my dream. I thought I would just be a teacher for the rest of my life.
Giving up a pension, summers off.
Yeah,
a lot of stability,
yeah. Oh, health
a lot of
insurance, which
not to mention
that's a whole other issue. I feel like everyone should have affordable, not even affordable, really. Everyone should have free Canada health insurance. People shouldn't be so afraid to go to the doctor if they're sick or to take proactive measures to not become sick. So that's a whole. Yes, I could rant on that. But it was hard to give up teaching and being with my people every day. I mean, teens are my people. But the thing was that I did write my first two books while I was teaching, and it became increasingly difficult to be writing while I was teaching.
And to get up at 4:45.
I mean, I'd go home at the end of the day, I'd have a huge stack of tests and homework and quizzes and lab reports to grade, and I'd want to write. So most of my writing was done during summers
sure.
and breaks.
Mm-hmm.
And I really...
Not the form in which, in the platform in which you wanted to execute this.
I wanted
natural
to have...
Natural creative aspect.
Yeah, and I wanted to have a new book out every year.
Yeah.
And in order to do that, I just had to spend more time. I had to make a decision to spend
more
time on
it. One way to
it.
Probably speed up the process is to not type in this manner.
What? How so?
I'm cueing Giselle.
Oh.
Do you have a typewriter that sounds like this?
No,
do you know
I
that
do
sound?
Not. I
that
should.
That is an old-fashioned typewriter. And the reason why I bring this up to all the PRN listeners is because Suzanne Colasanti does not have a cell phone, a microwave, a thing called, what's it called? Television. A television.
That was an awesome segue.
That was great.
Now I know why you're such a rock star, Mark.
Oh, thank you. Oh, I went from dude to rock star. This is great. So, but you do have a computer.
I do.
Hallelujah.
I am. I'm not a Luddite.
Because you got carpal tunnel from hitting it. You couldn't get the ribbon replacements anymore.
I love technology, certain aspects
yes.
of it. Absolutely, of course. And I have to give a shout out to Apple because shiny, happy Apple World has changed my life and made my job so much easier. So, yes, of course. I mean, although I am old school, I do love the look and the feel of a typewriter.
I have one of those on my dresser at home.
It's just cool.
Oh, it's great.
It's old school.
Weighs like 50 pounds. I love it. None of the keys work, but it doesn't have to because it looks very cool. Anyway, so you decided to make that full plunge, and here you are 8 books later with Now and Forever. So tell us more about, obviously you don't want to give anything away for any parents listening or any teenagers listening who want to buy the book, which is available at Barnes & Noble and Amazon.com. But
and everywhere. Got to give a shout out to the indies.
Oh, everywhere too.
Oh, everywhere.
The everywhere stores. Indies, especially in New York City.
Absolutely, and in libraries.
Can't forget libraries.
Absolutely.
With a little bit of a librarian look going for yourself today. Here.
Oh, do you like these cat's eyes?
Yes, I exactly. Like do you like these? These are called from Dwayne Reed.
Right.
Yeah.
I love the look.
And you can lose them, drop them, it doesn't matter.
Look at you.
So anyway, so she does find a way out, so to speak.
Sterling in Now and Forever.
And we all do, yes.
Well, hard to not give it away, but I will just say that she questions what might happen if forever comes to an end.
And don't we all?
But again, that's hard to do as a
mm-hmm.
teen.
Sure.
I feel like teenagers don't so much. It's really hard to imagine your first love, your second love, your third love. It's hard to imagine early relationships ending.
It's
no
hard
one wants to
even
think
imagine
about...
being 20 years old.
Oh, well,
it doesn't seem fathomable.
Well, for me, I mean, internal age 16, so...
Well, back when you were 16, I mean, the age of 30, like, you know somebody's 30 years of age. I mean,
exactly.
That's, so the whole world is just some kind of a magical place, but at the same time can be very daunting, as you know, because we spoke about this, and it's in one of your books about being bullied. Hang in there, is that the title?
Oh, Keep Holding On.
Keep Holding On is a book about being bullied. And you know a lot about, and I speak a lot about it. And not only are you a teacher, I'm going all over the place here because we don't have that much more time, but I want to really give people a good insight to who Suzanne Colasanti is, but a former teacher, writer, and also speaker. And you share your stories of overcoming adversity, being teased for not having the, being in with the in crowd because you couldn't wear the right sweater, and you had big hair. It was the 80s, right?
It was indeed the 80s.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So imagine the big hair, but with no access to gel or any product.
Well, that was pre-gel.
it really was.
That was PG. Totally. I mean, Brill Cream was still in back then. You don't know what Brill Cream is.
I do
that
because...
That was a male version of, like, my father's age of
no,
gel.
No, I do know Brill Cream because my BF/soulmate wears it when we go out on the town.
He does?
I like the look of it. I like the Don Draper look.
This guy is not
that,
cool.
So.
He wears Brill Cream?
He's so cool.
He's so cool?
Yes.
I got to check out Brill Cream. Because if he landed a hot girl like you, then he's doing something right. I love you, wife. So anyway, so this is just a marvelous thing that you took such a risk in life. But a risk that you believe in because you believe in karma, you believe in community service, you believe in giving back, and all of this collectively makes sense.
One of my favorite quotations is, "Leap and the net will appear." I feel like you have to take scary risks to create the life you want. The times in my life when I've had experienced the most fear and the biggest obstacles, and I've taken the risk and overcome them. Those were the times I've changed my life in an immense amount.
Mm.
Incredible amount, more than I thought would ever be possible. So to really be able to follow your heart truly, you do have to overcome that fear and take those risks.
Fear is a key word, and change sometimes is not comfortable.
No, and I feel like fear is an indicator of good change.
Absolutely, because that's why so many people are habitual. They don't like change because it requires thought and maybe listening to your inner voice.
Yeah, and I think if we're really at peace with ourselves and we really listen to our heart, if we're really in touch with our soul and what we want and what will make us happy, then it will be revealed what path we should take. And usually it's not the easy path, but it's the right path.
Do you think this is something that's sort of hardwired for most people? It seems like it comes naturally.
To resist change, you mean, or to overcome the fear?
To listen and understand who you are and what you should be and how to get there.
I definitely think it takes some time to work on yourself, be one with yourself, be present in the moment. I'm always talking about being in the now, mm-hmm. and being zen.
It's one of your mantras, right?
Yeah. My biggest one is dream big, though, because I think part of really wanting to live a happy life, wanting a job you're passionate about, surrounding yourself with positive people who inspire you every day, in order to create the life you want, you have to take steps every day to turn your big dreams into reality. Big dreams do become reality, but not overnight. It's a daily process.
And when you speak to students around the Tri-State area, you give them tips on doing this. And quickly, what's one or two tips?
Well, just that, to identify your top three goals, and to, if you can, just narrow down your most important goal out of those three, and then to ask yourself, what are three things you can do every day to work towards those goal, that main goal? Now, if you can do just one of those things every day, you're on your way to turning your dream into reality. If you can do all three of those things every day and work towards your three main goals every day, I mean, you're definitely going to achieve. If I could go from 73 cents in my bank account in college to owning an apartment in downtown Manhattan, anybody can do whatever their heart desires.
That's a great story. What a success story right there. And, you know, that worked for me actually once when I was in college. I didn't have any money in the bank, so I went up to a bank teller I thought was really cute on campus. And she goes, oh, you only have whatever, how many dollars? I said, well, I guess that's not enough money to take you out on a proper date. I guess I'll have to borrow some. And it worked. So anyway, the climax of this interview right here with Suzanne Colasanti and Mark Farrell is that how did we meet? It wasn't through the publishers who contact me to interview person X, Y, and Z. It's the online home of...
Well, it was a Craigslist ad,
yes,
for a furniture I was
not
selling.
Not for personals.
No, this was for very special workbench.
Not for female-seeking male, or male-seeking female, or any other version of that. It's because you were selling some great bookcases, and I was seeking some great bookcases.
Specifically workbench.
Workbench.
And unfortunately, they're out
history.
Of business. Very important part of history. Just beautiful wood furniture. Old school again. Classic. And it really broke my heart to give up these bookcases. But I, in my new apartment, I did a gut reno.
And look what it led to.
I had
a great relationship. You're in a studio
built in,
at PRN.fm talking
about
your eighth book. And I have two new great bookcases.
Yes.
SuzanneColasanti.com. That's SuzanneColasanti.com. If you can't remember spelling on that, just check out PRN.fm. Go to Insight, and it will be this podcast and all other podcasts that we have on this particular show. Suzanne, congratulations on your eighth book, Reinventing Yourself and Impacting Teens Worldwide.
Thank you, Mark.
My name is Mark Farrell. Thank you so much for joining the show. If you'd like to hire me for any speaking endeavors, colleges, high schools, corporations, MarkFarrellMotivation.com. MarkFarrellMotivation.com. Gary Noel's next. Speak to you next Thursday. Go Rangers!